Welcome everybody to the Win Hard Work Beats Talent podcast. I am Ryan Tubner, your illustrious host, and on the other side of the mic is my big dumb buddy of a man, Wes Becknell.
Please call me big man. Dumb. Sounds good.
At least I did call you a man, but here's the deal. Wes is a good dude. He is big. He's much bigger than me, as we all know. However, we are excited to bring you the one and only Matt Brown. Matt Brown formerly wrestled at Oklahoma State University and at 125 pounds. And then that's where I met him. But as we have discussed before the podcast, sometimes in life, after college, our weight gets a little like our fighting weight. That's where I am. That's where all of us are. Priorities change. But Matt also is in the business world, which we are excited to talk to him about, with the entrepreneurship, starting his own oil and gas company, a very successful one, and Emmaus Energy. So welcome, Matt, to our Win Hard Work Beats Talent podcast.
Yeah, thank you for having me. And yes, my college weight and my walking around weight now are not, they are not the same. They are not the same. There's not a lot of distance, but there's a pretty good distance in between where I was and where I am.
So you're not going to go back down to your fighting weight.
No. So the singlet that I wrestled at 125 is behind me. And I'm not sure I can fit my thigh in the waist part anymore. life changes. Three kids and a mortgage, you know, and a wife. It'll do that to you.
That it will. So we start off every podcast with rapid fire questions. Just to get to know you, start it all off. What is one hidden talent that you have?
One hidden talent that I have. I have started learning sign language.
Oh, nice. Yeah. So what made you decide to do that?
I'm a goal setter, and this year I was either going to learn the banjo or I was going to learn sign language, and I figured it might be easier to learn sign language. So, that's been my goal for 2024 is to, learn sign language, and that's what I've been doing.
Now is your wife doing it with you, or are you just doing it yourself?
No, and actually the class was so small at the little technology center, they actually canceled my last class because the teacher quit on us. So I'm like halfway through, like actually understanding a little bit of how to do this. And then all of a sudden it's like, you got to wait till next year. And so I will actually kick this back up January of 2025, and start the process all over again. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Interesting. Well, one question we ask a lot, we've got some pretty interesting answers. We've also had two people say the exact same spot. So this, I'm interested to see what you have to say. Where's one place that you've been that you have no desire to go back to?
Man, that's interesting. Probably, you know, I've been around the world a little bit, and there's some places that I want to go back to because I didn't have a great experience the first time. But a place that I've been that I don't want to go back to. How about Iowa City, Iowa?
There's nothing wrong with that at all.
I hate that place. I wouldn't live there. I mean, the Lord would have to verbally tell me I need to go live there if he wanted me there. I can't stand it.
I remember going up there. I think it was. Would have been 2000. Did we go up there your senior year? Or are they?
We did go up there my senior year for the duel and for the national. No, not the national tournament. National tournament was my junior year up there.
Yeah, that was your junior year. Yeah, we went up there for the duel.
Yeah.
I remember that. I would have to agree with you, Matt. Iowa City.
You know what the University of Iowa is? Because Iowa State's in Ames, right?
Right. Ames isn't so bad. Iowa City just sucks.
Mm-hmm. When you probably went up in the wintertime, it's cold, miserable.
Yeah, terrible.
Do anything outside, which makes sense.
You know.
Right, and what is your guilty pleasure?
You know, I love, it's more of a hobby. I'd like it to be more than a hobby most days, but I love to hunt.
Mm-hmm.
Bird.
I am an absolute outdoorsman.
Like, yeah, you go to duck hunt, bird hunt, deer hunt.
Really, I love to deer hunt, but I love to bird hunt as well. Dove and ducks, not bad. Geese. You know, it's hard to find pheasant around here. So, you know, to go pheasant hunting, you're usually going to some, you know, place that mm-hmm. puts them out in the grass and you go kick them up and shoot them, which really is more killing than hunting.
Yeah.
It's a massacre.
Yeah. Yeah.
We got like one of our carriers that we work with, NACO, National American.
Yeah.
They have that. Oh, yeah. They have that bird hunt deal.
Oh, which, yeah.
Like, it's not really a bird hunt. It's, no. Hey, here they come. Get ready to shoot.
Yeah, I've done that hunt before when I was at Brown and Brown in Pryor, and I did not care for that too much.
No, I didn't either. I did it once just to do it, and it's I haven't done it since.
Yeah,
there's one person that influenced you that really came as a shock or a surprise.
That's an interesting question. That's a really good question. As a shock or surprise. Golly, you know, I don't know the answer to that. Really, I've had multiple. I would say, you know, probably. How about my kids?
That's a great answer.
You know, I'm challenged by my children all the time. Just the quality of human being they are. It just challenges me to be better, to be a better dad, to be a better husband, to be a better human being, to be a better believer. I mean, my kids are, they challenge me. They just by the way they live their lives, they challenge me.
How old are your kids?
I have a 22, a 20, and a 14.
Okay.
Got it.
Okay, you're a little older.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we started young.
There's nothing wrong with that.
We did start young.
We did.
We started older.
Yes.
Yeah. We did not.
My dad might give me a hard time about that. He'll remind me. He's like, when I was your age, I had three in college. I'm like, well, I had fun. So
yeah. Yeah. So I've been, here's a fun fact that you won't know about me. I started dating when I moved to Bristow in the seventh grade, my wife was my first girlfriend.
Oh, wow.
And you know, as most silly little relationships go, we broke up, of course, my doing, I thought I could do better. I'm kidding. I'm kidding. But in my junior year, I realized that I was a fool and she was absolutely stunning and I needed to ask her back out on a date. And so we started dating my senior year. So when I was 20, we actually got married. Oh. I've been dating her since I was 16. Wow. And so, yeah, 20 and then our first kid at 23 and then 25.
Pretty good, Matt.
That's awesome.
What is the hardest thing you've had to overcome?
You know, two things. On the sports side, my injuries were the hardest thing that I had to overcome at Oklahoma State. You know, I had three knee surgeries and a wrist surgery. And so that was pretty dadgum difficult, just on a mental, not really physical. Physical, of course, because you're having surgeries and you're having to rehab and whatnot. But mentally, probably the hardest thing I ever had to do on the sports side, and even maybe even the hardest thing I've had to do in my life. But on the business side, when we expanded our business, so we have three sides of our business. We have lease, crude, we haul that, we do condensate, and we haul that, and then we have refined products. Well, we did condensate for a long time. I think from 2016 to about 2020, we were just doing one line. And that was it, one line of product. And then we decided to expand our business and go towards, really, it's all in the same direction, but just go towards another line of revenue. And in 2020, we started from scratch, had nothing. And from November of 2020 to about March of 2022, I was working like a dog to get it off the ground. And I remember it's probably the hardest thing that I've had to do because it really stretched me. It stretched me mentally, emotionally, spiritually. I remember one night because I mean, for like a year and 3-4 months, I never was home. Uh-huh. I was just trying to get this dadgum company off the ground, right? And so the only thing I knew to do was pray, you know, and work as hard as I possibly could. Uh-huh. And so I would spend, you know, I'd get to the office at 6:37, and I'd leave the office 6:37, 8, 9 o'clock at night. And all I would do all day long would just be call and then process what I, you know, the whole notes, call, process the next one, call, process the next one. And I was just, you know, driven to the point of, we can't fail. We've got to succeed. But I think I probably ate dinner at my house 10 or 12 times in that Monday through Friday with my family, probably 10 or 12 times through that period. Because I was just, it had to work, right? We just had to make it happen. And I remember one night my wife, I sat down at dinner and it's probably about 8:45, and I pulled my food out of the microwave and I sit down at the table and I'm eating, and she comes in and she pulls hers out of the oven and sits down next to me, and I just started crying because it just meant so much that she waited to have dinner with me. I don't know how many, every night I sit down at the dinner table by myself and I'd eat my food and I'd be like, Lord, I sure hope this is going to be worth it. Mm-hmm. Would I do it again? 100%. But in the midst of it, it was really difficult.
Yeah.
Mentally.
That's a lot.
That is a lot. It's probably one of the best thorough thought out answers we've ever had. Man, kid, this is like episode 8. But still,
well, the truth of the matter is my life is just a testimony of what the Lord's done. Mm-hmm. And so I've shared this so many times that when the question gets asked, I'm like, boom, here it goes.
Yeah. Well, and it's a good testament to you, your wife, your family, your perseverance, you know, and to what God does in our lives each and every day.
100%.
And so it's a great testament.
So this is a relatively new question. I think actually you're the second person to get it, but it's a hypothetical, obviously. It says, you walk into a room with everyone you've met from birth until this moment. Who's the first person you go talk to and why?
My wife.
All over again, huh?
That's my wife, 100%.
That's a good answer.
Yeah. Absolutely. I would marry her a million times over again. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
So I didn't ask earlier, your kids, boys, girls, mixture?
Girl, boy, girl.
Nice. Is the boy wrestling?
No. So if my oldest, my oldest is a girl, and if they would have had women's wrestling whenever she was going through elementary, she'd have been an absolutely just in tremendous, she'd have been a stud, right? Because she has what it takes up here.
Yeah.
She's got a determination about her that, you know, if she sets her mind to it, it's going to be accomplished. And, or if it's not accomplished, she's going to freaking give it everything she's got to make it happen, to try to make it happen. My son is so much like my wife. He's got a tremendous amount of ability. Uh-huh. But Warren is really laid back and, he enjoys life.
Right.
Right. And he enjoys his friends. Warren is a great friend to people. He is just a super, super human being. But when it come to having the mental desire and that drive and that want to be the very best and to be that you got to have in wrestling, right? You just got to have it. You know, that's not his personality. So I didn't force it. But he was a great football player. He was a great baseball player. I'm sorry, but he just wrestling's a different. It's a different gig, man.
Oh yeah, it is.
So I grew up in North Texas, and we didn't have wrestling. That was not something that was like it just wasn't there. Just not something that we experienced. We moved to Oklahoma, and my youngest and oldest did it through one of the schools up here just to kind of try it out. And my oldest just absolutely fell in love with it. And COVID happened and kind of everything stopped. And my youngest hated it because it just wasn't. He's like, this is not my thing. Like you put the rope in front of him and say, climb the roof and touch the ring, the bell. I mean, he'd do it in 2 seconds, like a cat.
Yeah.
And the oldest one would love to be able to do it. And he's strong enough, but he just didn't have that. But it was just funny watching two kids, like you mentioned, who are so totally different.
Right.
And just the oldest one, my oldest one would be one. He would figure it out. He was wrestling a kid as a fifth grader who had just won state at Edmond North at 20 or 30 pounds, whatever he was. And he's just throwing my son around. And my kid's just laughing like, this is great. I'm like, your tail kick is great. He's like, this is so much fun. I do this all day. I'm like, well, go cowboy. Have fun.
Yeah, wrestling takes a mental mindset. I wrestled for 4.5 weeks in high school. The coaches kept, Chesbro kept coming at me. I was like, fine, I'll do it. But I didn't have the mental capacity or tenacity at that time to do it. I was more into baseball, you know, in Stillwater, we were on the block. So if you don't have the mental tenacity to really want to wrestle and go one-on-one combat, it's too hard to do it.
Yeah.
You're just not going to have fun.
I agree. 100%. Yeah, 100%.
I mean, do I wish I stuck with it? Maybe. But at that time, looking back, I mean, it would have been a moot point. Yeah. I didn't have that mentality.
Yeah. No. And that, yeah, that it just takes, I always tell people, it takes someone that's crazy and just a little bit not all together to be a really good wrestler.
Oh, it does. I mean, we actually put my daughter and son in jiu-jitsu. There's a wrestling coming in. They do wrestling every Fridays.
Yeah.
They love it.
Yeah. I love jiu-jitsu. They
love it. And so sticking with wrestling, talk about how did you get involved with wrestling? Did you start at an early age? Where did you realize, at what point did you realize, okay, this is something that I'd like to do in college?
You know, that I knew at a young age, but at 6 years old, my cousin had gone out the year before for wrestling. And so the next year, I guess I would have been five, his first year he went, I didn't do it. But at six, football season was over. Him and my brother had played football. And, you know, they were like, my cousin was going to go back out for wrestling. And, of course, they were a couple years older. Him and my brother would have been 8 or 9 years old. And they were going to go out for wrestling. Well, when I was young, and it probably still this way now, you know, if they're doing it, then we might as well throw the little guy in there, you know, everybody else in there as well, because we got to go to practice anyways. And if it helps them get some sleep because it wears them out, let's do that. And so at six, I started, and I was absolutely terrible. The only thing that I had going for me is I was just super ornery and wiry. You know, I was that little skinny kid that was pretty quick and kind of fast, just running around the mats, being all wild and crazy. And then I just had a pain tolerance that was pretty high because my brother and my cousin beat the daylights out of me all the time. And so when I went into the wrestling room, it was just like I was getting to do what we did in our living room and our bedrooms. Yeah. I was getting to do, and someone kept them from hurting me. Like mm-hmm. This time I didn't have to cry or I didn't get punched in the face. You know, this time I could actually have a little bit of like referees keeping us going in the right direction. So, that was at six, and my parents, you know, they never had a lot of money. So when we did stuff as a family, it was usually, you know, sporting events, you know, mm-hmm. and stuff. So it was pretty cheap to go to an Oklahoma State wrestling match back in the day. It still is, honestly. And I remember, I don't know, 7 or 8 years old going to an Oklahoma State wrestling match. I can literally remember I was facing south on the east side of the arena. We were walking in the little middle, you know, the old gallery had two levels, right? And had a little deal that went around it with the gold or the brass, you mm-hmm. know, railing. We were on the east side, facing south, walking out of the arena, and the heavyweight was wrestling. And I think they were wrestling Penn State, and the OSU kid won. And I remember the place just going absolutely crazy. I remember walking to the car, and I told my dad, I said, that's what I want to do. And he was like, okay, well, if you're going to do that, you're going to have to do all the things that no one else wants to do. You're going to have to outwork everybody and blah, blah. You know, he gives me the dad spiel. And I literally took it to heart. Mm-hmm. You know, we'd be driving home from school, and I'd tell my mom, you know, a mile away from the house, 2 miles away from the house, and I'd be in first, second grade, third grade. And I'd just be like, hey, Mom, let me out here. And she'd be like, well, what are you doing? I'm like, well, I'm going to run in. And she's like, we lived on a county road. She's like, What do you mean you're gonna, yeah, I remember telling me, what do you mean you're going to run in? I was like, well, if I want to wrestle at Oklahoma State, I got to do things that no one else is doing. And I just got, you know, she'd pick off and I just run in my whatever shoes I had on and my school clothes. And so I would say at a very early age, I knew exactly what I wanted to do.
That's pretty.
Did you say you grew up in Bristow?
So I was born and raised in Cleveland. And in the seventh grade, we left Cleveland and went to Bristow. Okay. And then, so I went to Bristow all of middle school and all of high school.
Mm-hmm. You still lived in small town America where you could drop your kid off on a dirt road and no one thought anything about it. I mean, today.
Well, And when you're talking about 87, 88, 89, 90, I mean, it was still, you know, salt of the earth type stuff back then.
Those were the good days.
Yeah. You know, you have a farmer drive by and honk his horn at you, you know. Trying to cheer you on, go buddy, you know, and whatever.
You're lucky he didn't pick you up and make you start hauling hay.
There is some truth to that. I mean, there probably were times where I had to go and fix a fence or something with somebody.
Oh yeah, pick you up, knew who you were, and like, okay, he'll work hard. Let's go.
Yeah, kid. Grab that brown kid. He's free labor. His dad likes it when we pull him into the barn.
Exactly. So what did the wrestling gave you that mindset, as you said, of just at a very early age, your dad gave you that dash feel of, if you want to do that, you're going to have to outwork everybody. How did that mentality take you from where you were at that time to where you are now?
You know, I think the wrestling mentality and the discipline and the determination, you know, it's not something that just, it's something that's in you that has to get pulled out of you. Right. I don't think it's something, especially raising children and being around people, employees, different personalities in life. I don't think, I think some people just are just built, you know, their personalities are one way and other personalities are another way. It doesn't make them right or wrong. But, you know, as goes for the sport of wrestling, I think having something in me that just needed to get pulled out. And whatever it was when we were watching that match, you know, that duel at Oklahoma State, whatever it was, you know, when you win a tournament for the first time or, you know, you start having a little bit of success and it just gives you that extra drive, that little extra motivation to keep going. You know, the sport of wrestling for me has made all the difference in my marriage. It's made a difference in how I raise my kids, my work ethic, how I treat my employees. You know, one thing that the sport of wrestling does, actually two things that I think it does really well that no one talks about, it teaches you how to suffer,
mm-hmm.
right? And it teaches humility.
Mm-hmm.
One, just to wear the singlet, you know, out, you're basically bare naked, you know, you've got this tight little leotard on. That's humility, right? And suffering.
It's comfortable.
But, you know, it just teaches you how to, you know, you want to call it discipline, you want to call it whatever, you know, cutting weight and you know, mentally tough. But the truth of the matter is it teaches you how to suffer. Because life sucks sometimes. We live on a broken rock that is deteriorating every day, physically and spiritually, right? And so there is suffering that happens in this world, whether it's, you know, a family member dies or, you know, a kid has an accident or you lose your job or whatever it is. And the sport of wrestling truly teaches you how to, like, figure it out,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, life's not fair, and I got to figure it out. You know, I used to tell myself, I cried. I'm a crier, right? I guess. I don't know. I've cried multiple times in my life when it gets tough. But I remember my first year at Oklahoma State, I was calling my dad, and I was just whining, and I was tearing up, and I'm telling him I'm coming home, and I'm sick of this crap. I'm one semester in. And two things. One, he says, well, you know where sympathy is in the dictionary? And I'm like, no. And he's like, between shit and syphilis. So figure it out. And I was like, well, that's not really what I wanted you to say. And he said, well, I tell you what, you come home and I'll make sure that, you know, your mama, she'll hold you in her lap and she'll tell you how sweet you are and all those things. And I'm like, yeah, that's not what I want to hear either. And he told me something. He said, you know what? Go get one takedown.
Yeah.
Figure out how to get one takedown and then build off that. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did. I don't think I got a takedown the next practice, but I started getting, I got like one takedown one time, and it goes back to one match, you know, win one match, win one tournament, win what, and it just drives that determination. Mm-hmm. But it's super humbling when you're getting your butt whooped.
It's funny, as we have had conversations with athletes that played at multiple levels of sport. And the thing is, you don't realize, they said the thing you don't realize is the speed of the game increases the higher level you get, because you go from being the best at where you were to being around the best of all the people who were at where they were. And right. The pyramid just gets smaller and smaller and smaller.
It does.
And if you want to win, one of my dad's really good friends is a college basketball coach. He's been a women's college basketball coach forever. I mean, he just can't quit. And he goes, I want that kid that, he goes, I watch them when they're on the bench not playing. He goes, mm-hmm. I want to see how engaged they are right then and there, because that tells me what kind of player they are. And when they get in there and play and things are going bad, are they grinding even harder, trying to figure out how to win? Are they just one of those prima donnas who just cash and go, oh yeah, well, we've lost, let me try to get my 20 and then go to the next game? He goes, I want that kid right. that's just busting their tail baseline to baseline for, you know, for not for 94 feet the whole time. And then I can figure out the rest of it. I can do the rest of it. And it seems like
right.
that's the hardest thing. And the thing about when you're wrestling, you're on an island. It is huge. You, you can't hide behind four other players or, you know, no. other players. It's you in a circle with everybody watching.
Yeah. Like, again, I always tell people, football players, they go hard for 30 to 40 seconds and then they get a minute and a half break. Mm-hmm. Like, what would that be like?
That'd be awesome, wouldn't it?
You don't get that hard.
No. No.
There's no shape like wrestling shape.
No, not
Dixie's
at all.
Dixie's first jiu-jitsu tournament, she learned that the hard way.
Yeah.
She won that first match, but you could tell she was gassed because she wasn't used to, first of all, that adrenaline going for her first match, and then just being in shape. She's in gymnastic shape, but wrestling shape is a little different.
Oh, totally.
Whole different. And so you're wrestling at Oklahoma State and you're wearing that orange singlet. At that time and still today, I mean, it's still the most storied program in all of sport.
Yes.
Not just collegiate, it's NFL, NHL, MLB. I mean, it has 7 more championships than the Yankees.
Right.
So what's it like wearing that brand?
I mean, as an athlete, it's the greatest thing I've ever done. Mm-hmm. Take my All-American status away, take my state titles away, take all the things away. Just don't take away my opportunity to run out in Gallagher, Iowa. Mm-hmm. Wearing the Oklahoma State uniform and then peeling it off in an orange singlet. You know, I don't want to go back and ever do it again. But I do every now and again when we're at a duel. I'll look at my wife and I'll be like, you know, I'd give just about anything to just lead a team, just lead a team out of Gallagher one more time. Now I don't want to wrestle. I don't want to do the match. I don't want to make the weight. I don't want to do any of that. But if they just let me run out in front of everybody wearing one of those uniforms again, like an old man, reliving his glory days. Now that would be something. Cause I tell you, I still remember the first time I led a team out into that arena. What an honor. What an absolute honor. I mean, it's like playing basketball at UCLA or playing football at Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is an honor above all honors to wear that singlet.
What do you think with new coaching staff? We'll stick just a little bit more into wrestling, and then we're going to go to some business.
Okay.
But for the new staff coming in, what's the excitement like around the program? What are your, you know, personal thoughts, your feelings, getting somebody that's outside the program? This is the first time that I remember that head coach on down to the whole staff, besides Tyler, they have no relationship to the program, but they all speak very highly of what is the brand of Oklahoma State wrestling.
Yeah, I think My one word that I would say is it's refreshing. You know, Chad Weiberg had the hardest job in all of college sports in May of 2024, right? I would not want to have been him as an AD because it's a once-in-a-lifetime job. I actually have a picture of the coaching staff right there on my wall. You know, we've had six coaches in 110 years. Who does that? Like the Steelers in football, I think, is probably the only one close to that, right? And, you know, my encouragement to the AD staff was, you can hire the wrong football coach or the wrong basketball coach at Oklahoma State and you'll be all right. But you hire the wrong wrestling coach and you'll get fired. And so turn over every rock, go make everybody tell you no until you find your guy. Yep. And because go ask Dan. The job's bigger than anybody. Like, you could ask Dan, Dan, do you want to come back? I mean, and he would probably consider it. Kel, do you want the job? You want to leave Penn State? And he's going to have to consider it. Why? Because this is the greatest wrestling program in the entire country. And so, you know, did we have a guy at Oklahoma State that could have fit the bill? Yeah, we did. Mm-hmm. And would it have been what it is today? Probably not, in a different way, but could have been good. Could have been really good. But I think, honestly, the best thing that could happen for Oklahoma State wrestling is to just get, you know, I always call it like an inbreeding.
Yeah.
You know, when you keep going back, you see these high schools and they hire and they fire the same people over and over and over again as teachers or coaches or whatever. And I'm always like, why don't they hire someone outside of their realm that they don't know? And I think doing that has given them, has given the program just a breath of fresh air, because it's all new. Mm-hmm. Hey, we don't warm up like this. We warm up like this. What? Hey, and we don't do this when we hit a single leg. We hit it like this, and this is how we drill, and this is what we do. And all of a sudden, it's not mundane anymore, because it's just different. Mm-hmm. And different usually breeds a sense of excellence, because now you're striving a little bit differently. And mm-hmm. so it's just another set of growth that you didn't even know was there. Yeah. that they're tapping into. And I think these guys are some of the hardest working coaches that I've ever been around in my life. I think they have an innovative mind that is going to set them apart from any other staff in the country. And I'm telling you right now, if there's a high school kid that listens to this and he is thinking, man, should I go to Penn State? Should I go to Iowa? Should I go to Ohio State? Should I go to Minnesota or Cornell or Oklahoma State? If Oklahoma State chases him and he doesn't go to Oklahoma State, he's a fool.
Yeah.
Because I'm telling you right now, what they got going on down there is just freaking awesome.
I mean, look at the weights. I mean, if you're a 25, 33, 41 pounder, you're wrestling with Thomas Gilman.
Ron Bravo Young and Dayton Fix. So you're wrestling with world silver, bronze. Yeah. Right? Now what it is? I think that's what it is.
And then Thomas, U.S. Olympic bronze.
Yeah, exactly.
And so your head coach is, oh, by the way, going to go to the Worlds to compete and have a chance to win a world championship again.
Yeah. And then your middleweight guys, you couldn't really ask to be working out and training with anybody. I'm telling you, Jimmy Kennedy is I don't know him really well, but what I do know of him, he is a fine guy. And he's incredibly driven and he loves these kids. All of them do, man. I tell you, they basically have set the mark of excellence for these student athletes, and they've said, here's the mark. Now you go try to figure out how to get there.
Right.
And I'm talking about excellence in discipline, in work ethic, and determination, you know, all the things that you're trying to find in a good wrestler. They've set that bar very high of what excellence looks like. And man, if you're an athlete and you're a goal chaser, I don't know how it could get any better than that.
I mean, and that's even going down to the strength and conditioning coach with Nick.
I agree. Nick's awesome.
It is the bomb. He is awesome. I had a chance to talk with him at the golf tournament. Golly, I would. He's going to get those guys so ready to roll.
He is. Yeah, he's already doing it, right?
It's going to be awesome.
You can hear the passion in your voice for your university and what they've, what you were able to experience and what you, your expectations are, which is, for me personally, it's something I just love hearing. I mean, you can just, you can feel it. It's in your bones.
Yeah. Well, when you followed it since you were a kid, it truly is a passion. Now it's a worldly passion. Don't get me wrong. I don't get too bent out of shape if we lose a wrestling match, but the good thing is at Oklahoma State, we don't lose too many. So I don't have to get bent out of shape. But I will tell you, I did tell David, and I told the staff, I said, guys, we've got 34 banners hanging in Gallagher, Iowa. Hit 50 by the time you retire, and no one will ever catch us.
Ever. No one. Ever.
And they're like, well, that's only 16, and we're only, you know, early 30s, so maybe we do a few more than that. And I was like, hey, you can do as many as you want. Just get 16 more.
Yeah, get 16.
Have 100. Hang a half 100
of them. Do it. Do it. Okay, last question from me for OSU Wrestling. You're Mount Rushmore for OSU Wrestling.
Oh.
Coach, athlete.
Oh, man. Okay, well, Utaki.
Yep.
For sure. I think just wrestlers are coaches as well, because Ed Gallagher was not a coach or not a wrestler.
Coach and or athlete.
Well, then it's got to be – I mean, it's got to be Ed Gallagher, Utaki. Mm-hmm. Golly, you're leaving off Myron Roderick, but you got to put up Pat Smith and John Smith, right?
Yeah.
But think about who you're leaving off when you only put four. Mm-hmm. You're leaving off Myron Roderick. I mean, you're leaving off Jimmy Jackson. Frank Lewis was Olympic gold medalist.
Is that Tucker's grandpa?
Cross. Tucker grandpa was Myron Roderick.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, you're leaving off Griffin. Golly, I mean, and just think of the wrestlers that you'd have to leave off. Blue Ball, Doug. Man, I feel terrible about that. But
gold medalist.
But that's who I would have to – I mean, Utaki won two golds for Japan, was a three-time national champ, undefeated. If the guy had been – if they would have let freshman wrestle when he was that age, he would have been a four-time undefeated champ. I mean, a two-time gold medalist for Japan. Truly maybe the greatest wrestler that's ever come through Oklahoma State University, right? So if you don't put him on the board, I think that's just foolish. Ed Gallagher started cowboy wrestling. I mean, he is the – father of the sport. Mm-hmm. He got to be up there.
Yeah.
John's the greatest USA wrestler of all time. How do you not put him on? And then Pat, you know, Pat is first four-time national champ ever. I mean, I like my list of four.
I just feel bad with the guys you left off.
But man, I mean,
Jake Rochelt went 25-1 in the national tournament.
Yeah. Well, Chris Pendleton or Mark Munoz or – I mean, these are just guys I wrestled with, right? Eric Guerrero, you know, three-time national champ, four-time All-American.
Yeah.
Kendall Cross, Kenny Mundy.
yeah, you're leaving off a whole list of dudes.
Yeah, and I that's just 80s and 90s. I haven't even gotten into the 70s and 60s and the 50s when we were just crushing it. So, yeah, man, that's my four.
Nice. All righty. Appreciate it. We'll close that OSU wrestling and go on to some Emmaus. So you start. You talk about when you started Emmaus.
When we're getting back, you know, back in, kicks back up. 2020. Unless it's just me.
Okay,
that may be him. Well, what made you get in the energy sector?
So what got me in the energy sector?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm actually fourth generation oil man.
Really?
Yeah. So my great granddad. In the 50s, started drilling wells in Osage County, Pawnee County, up in that area. And he drilled hundreds and thousands of wells. So naturally, my granddad didn't finish high school. I think he dropped out his sophomore or junior year and went to work because that's what you did in the 50s.
Sure.
He went to work in the oil field, and I don't know his full story. He was very impactful in my life, but I don't know his full work story. I do know that they moved around, and then, you know, he started his own. He worked for his dad, and then he started his own production company and whatnot. And so then my dad, of course, and my uncles, you know, what are they going to do? Well, they graduate high school and they go right into the oil field because that's what you do in the 70s, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so all three of my grandfather's boys went into oil business and started doing their thing. And, you know, and so in 86 or 87, the oil went bust. And I remember very vividly of my dad having to sell everything to keep from going bankrupt. Mm-hmm. And I remember as a little boy, him bartering. He's having to sell his stuff, and he's kind of bartering these pipe threaders away. And I remember the guy offered him something, and my dad just said, "Is that the best you can do?" And I remember the look on my dad's face when he said it. And I couldn't have been six, seven, 8 years old. But man, it's so vivid in my memory because it was everything that my dad had. Like, that was all that he had left of his business. And as I sit there a few times as an adult, as I've just thought about that moment of, and what would that be like to be in my dad's shoes? But, you know, he never missed a beat. He just kept doing what he knew how to do, and that was the oil field. And so when I got into college, I was going to be, you know, my dad had taught me, hey, you're not going in the oil business. My boys need to go do something else because this ain't the business to be in. And I was like, okay, I'm going to be an English teacher and a coach because dad said I don't need to go in the oil business. So this is what I'm going to go do. I got into my first semester at college, and I had a D in philosophy. And Coach Smith was like, what in the world's going on? And I was like, Coach, I can't stay awake. This is terrible. It's boring. He's like, you need to go see the advisor and let's pick a degree that's going to keep your attention. And so the advisor just said, hey, what do you like? Da, da, da. I'm like, I just like to wrestle. That's the only reason I'm here. Blah, blah. You know, I gave her the whole story. And she said, well, what does your family do for a living? And I said, well, they're in the oil business. And she's like, well, we have a geology program. Ooh. I was like, yeah, let's try it. So I took a geology 101 and fell in love with it. And so changed my degree. And when I got out, like any decent athlete that's had success, you know, I need to be in the insurance business like you guys, because they think that's where you're going to make all your money and get rich. And so mm-hmm. I actually got in the insurance business for 3 years out of college, and I hated every minute of it. I mean, I had it all. I had my securities license. I had P&L or health and then property and casualty. I had it all. I was fully licensed and sold a lot of insurance and I just told my, I remember telling my wife, I was like, I hate this. Like, I hate this job. And she's like, what do you want to do? And I was like, I don't know. And so I just started Googling jobs and I found a job with Sunoco Logistics in Tulsa as a crude buyer. I started doing it and really enjoyed it. And a buddy of mine, I'm kind of giving you my career, but a buddy of mine hired me away out of Bristow to kind of be a CFO, CEO for his construction company. And in the midst of it, we had the turn down of the economy in 2009, 2010, somewhere right in there. And he cut my salary. He's like, dude, I don't know what to do. He's like, I got to cut your salary because I can't afford it. And I was like, okay, well, in the interim, can I work till like 2:30 or 3 and then cut out and go market crude oil? And he's like, on my own? He's like, yeah. And so I just started third-party marketing crude oil.
Oh.
And I really did well. And I called my – future business partner up on the phone because he was in the refined products business. And I said, hey, I need a market. And he, long story short, he basically said, why are you doing this as a third party? Like, you're giving up so much money. Why don't you just do it on your own as a first purchaser? And I said, because I don't know what I'm doing. And he's like, well, I can help you with that. I was like, okay. And I'm the grunt, right? I'm the guy that just grinds it out and works hard. And, you know, being partnered with him, we started a little business and we just started doing it one load at a time. And we grew it into what it is now. And, you know, looking back, I've learned a lot. I didn't even know what a P&L was. I had no idea. I didn't know what a balance sheet was. I didn't go to business school. I didn't know anything. So when the bank's asking you for a P&L so they can see if they want to give you some money or whatever, and I'm like, what's a P&L? You know, and I'm Googling it on my phone as they're talking, and I'm like, oh, profit and loss. Well, how do I get one of those? Then they wanted a pro forma, and I'm like, Googling a pro forma. I'm like, what's a pro forma? I don't know what that is. And so I literally learned business 101 as we went along because I didn't know anything.
You just knew how to work hard. Like, you knew.
I just knew that I had a beautiful wife that I wanted to take care of, and I had some pretty awesome kiddos. And all I knew is that I had to wake up and go do something all day long. And I needed to do it with my whole heart so I could take care of
it. It's almost like you're the face and the epitome of why we started this podcast. Is others can hear the stories of their life and what they went through for, so they can be inspired. You know, when hard work beats talent. I mean, you worked hard your whole entire life.
Yeah, and I will say, as you guys know, business is not fair all the time. Most of the time, it's not fair. Most of the time, the good guy doesn't win, right? But I'll tell you who does win 90% of the time: the guy that picks up the phone and is responsive, the guy that considers his customer more than himself, right? And the guy that truly understands the value of business, of what it means to get up and go to work and build relationships and actually have more than just a working relationship, but actually have a relationship with people that matters, right? Like, I feel like if my customers were to talk to you guys, they would say, you know, if there's one thing, I hope they would say, if there's one thing about Matt that we like the most is that he actually cares for us. Mm-hmm. I could probably make a lot more money than what I currently make, but it's not fair.
You're right.
And we do what's fair. And other companies, they can do whatever they want, but this company, we do what's fair. Even if it's not for my benefit, we still do what's fair all the
time. That's early on in my business career, I learned from my dad. It was a long time ago. I remember this vividly. I think I was in college or something, and he told me that his first sale of one of his new companies he started, he had to kind of give him a discount because he said it's better to give a discount and make a little bit of money than to, so you can have their trust in the relationship and you build that over long term. And so I've always, I mean, it's true in your world, it's true in our world. I mean, it's true in Wes's world too. When working with us agents, I mean, you got to build that trust and relationship.
Yeah. Doing what you say you're going to do and how you're going to do it. Right. And if you make your yes be a yes and your no be a no. And if sometimes you have hard conversations, you pick up the phone, you don't send an email saying, "I'm sorry, I can't do it." You pick up the phone and go, "Listen, here's why I can't do it. I thought I could. Yeah. I apologize because I made a mistake and I apologize for that, but let's see what we can do moving forward." And that goes a long way in building that trust.
Yeah. You know, I learned early on because just family circumstances, I learned how to say no and I'm sorry. And I tell you, I've taught my kids that if there's two things, I mean, I tell them all the time, there's two things I ever teach you. You better learn how to say no and learn how to apologize. They'll suit you well. And I tell you, when you sincerely can apologize to someone, it's like you just dumped water on the fire.
Oh, you absolutely do. There was one time we were going through a renewal. There's a new piece of business that I just picked up. And so there's a bar along with it that I had to place elsewhere. And so they said bind one place and I got panicked. And so I bound the other one too. And it was like a down payment of $5,000 or something. So he was pissed off. I went in and met with him face to face. I said, listen, I'm sorry. And then it's like the whole discussion was fine.
Yeah.
I was like, here's what I'm going to do. This is what I propose. Yeah. And they were fine with it.
Yeah.
So
the really moment, is amazing.
It's amazing. Once you go in and you say, I'm sorry, this is what happened. I apologize. We're doing this to fix it. No, I mean, that's fine. That's
yeah.
The way it is.
I know we're up against some time constraints due to extenuating circumstances for 2/3 of the party here. So I think like this could go on for another 45 minutes. Like this has been a phenomenal conversation. Yeah. Matt, I just want to tell you, just spending a little time with you on here and get to know you has been an absolute pleasure for me personally. To hear the passion and joy and who you are as a person, it seeps through you. And the fact of how much you lift up your family and you work hard to provide and to provide them not only financially, but as both their spiritual, like the head of the family, and as the head of, well, let's be honest, our wives run our lives. But you are the man of the house, and you're helping to lead your family into the next generation, whether it be in the oil field or whatever passions they pursue. And just want to say thank you for your time and carving out some of your valuable time for us to share your story here through this podcast. And I can't say thank you enough for that.
Yeah, it's an honor. And honestly, as I told you guys earlier, our lives are just a testimony of what the Lord's given us. And so anytime someone wants me to share, I'm like, yeah, I'd love to just tell you about the things that's happened. Not all pretty, but all has got me to the place that I am and for the purpose that I've been given.
Mm-hmm. Well, we appreciate it, Matt, very much. It's been an honor and pleasure, and it's been fun.
Yep.
Well, thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Yep. Thank you, everybody, for listening. All this will be uploaded to all the social media channels and platforms for your consumption. Please be with us next time as we bring you the next When Hard Work Meets Talent podcast. Take care.